Vaydaber Hashem el Moshe lemor, Nasau et Rosh b'nei Gerishon gam heim leveit avotam lemishpachotam. Hashem spoke to Moshe, saying, take a census of the sons of Gershon as well, according to their father's household, according to their families.
Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Come right over. Chair by the window. Comfortable?
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is officially for Parshat Naso, but it will be more of a look back very recently at Shavuot. Recording and first broadcast, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the seventh day of Sivan, 5773, corresponding to May 16th, known in Israel as Isru Chag, also known as Yom Tavoach, but Isru Chag is the day following one of the festivals. Shavuot in Israel is one day, as the Torah ordains, which is the sixth of Sivan, more accurately the 50th day of the counting of the Omer. We count 49 days, 7 full weeks. That last count of 49th night was Monday night. That applied to all day Tuesday, and Tuesday night began Shavuot. Outside of Israel, and I do hope that you are not listening to this while it is still daytime of Thursday, because it is forbidden to listen to the internet, radio, etc., etc., on Chag. If you're a non-Jew listening to the show, that's fine with me. If you are a non-observant Jew who does listen to the internet on Chagim and on Shabbat, then I feel a little guilty about it, because I don't want to facilitate someone's violation of halacha. But there's another side to it as well. I won't get into that. Excuse me. Here in Israel, as I said, yesterday was Shavuot. It was a one-day holiday, but it feels much longer, especially for those who stay up all night. And we had a very lovely program at the Israel Center. We also had a tiul, which went out to the hotel near Etzion. They went out on Monday, they had a tiul, then they had a nice Shavuot, and they're not even back yet Thursday. So that's the story. But I definitely do want to look back at Shavuot and sort of put on record a new thought for me for this year. And I happen to have spoken about it this past Monday at a shiur I gave at the Israel Center. And I spoke about it yesterday afternoon, which is less than 24 hours ago, here at the Israel Center on Shavuot afternoon. But before we get into that, let's do Tehillim 121, Psalm Kuf Kaf Aleph. Shir lama'alot, esa enai el heharim me'ayin yavo ezri. Ezri me'im Adonai osei shamayim va'aretz. Al yitain lamot raglecha, al yanum shomerecha. Hine lo yanum velo yishan, shomer Yisrael. Adonai shomerecha, Adonai tzilecha, al yad yiminecha. Yomam hashemesh lo yakeka v'yoreach balayla. Adonai yishmorcha mikol ra, yishmor et nafshecha. Adonai yishmor tzeitecha uvoecha, me'ata v'ad olam. Achenu kol Beit Yisrael, hanatunim batzara uvashivya, haomidim bein bayam, uvein bayabasha, hamakom yirachem aleihem, ויוציאם מצרה לירווחה ומאפלה לאורה, ומשיבוד לגאולה השתה בעגלה ובזמן קריב ונאמר אמן. Maybe before I begin, let me play a musical clip, which I smiled when I came across it. It's a song that was extremely popular a number of years ago. It is still played often at weddings, not as much as it used to be, I think, but it's a beautiful song. It's called Shiru LaMelech. The words translate into English, "And now, children, sing to the king," capital K, "with a crown of adornment, and happy are those who make heard the sound of his praise." What's very special about this particular song on this particular day is that in other contexts it wouldn't be able to be played. What do I mean? The song comes, and by the way, you're hearing it from me. Maybe you knew it, some of you. Most, I would imagine, don't know where it's from. The words to this song come from the liturgical poetry of the second day of Shavuot, which is today, a day that doesn't exist in Israel, but does exist around the world. And therefore, this is an extremely timely song. Except, as I mentioned before, I'm hoping that most people are not hearing these words or this song while it is still Chag for them. So there's that mixed feeling again. I recommend that you, if you have friends who know this song, and as I said, very popular, they know this song, ask them where it's from. My bet is most people will not know where it's from, and you could surprise them by telling them it's from the Piyut of the second day Shavuot. Here it is.
Oh, yeah.
Shiru Lamelech. I find that an inspired and inspiring song. I'd like to share with you my thought for Shavuot this year. And I have to tell you a couple of little things first to put it in perspective. I, as a teacher for many, many years in different frameworks, fear each holiday as it approaches, each special day on the calendar, that I will be tempted to teach the been there, done it stuff that I know well and that I've taught in the past and I teach it again. Without my having something new, I might be giving some of my students and some of my listeners and some of my readers something new, but I need for myself to have a new thought, a new idea, a new something to kick around at every holiday. And then it's not the same as it's ever been before. And I believe that's important for all of us. I remember many years ago in Army duty, reserves, I was sitting at a little break and reviewing the weekly portion. One of my colleagues, not religious, came up and asked me what I was doing, and I told him I was reviewing the weekly portion. He asked me, don't I already know the weekly portion, and haven't I already reviewed it many times in the past? What was I doing it again for? And I said that there's always something new that you get, a new insight, a new idea, and that's a very important idea for what we consider to be the living Torah. Eitz Chaim Hi. It is a living tree that's always shooting out more branches and more leaves and flowers and fruit and different ideas to grasp. So to me that's an important thing, and I got very excited when I had this idea. Then I realized that the Shavuot issue of Torah Tidbits was combined with Bamidbar and this week's Seder of Naso last week. This week we did not publish because of Shavuot in the middle of the week. So I didn't have this idea. Had I had it before I wrote the lead Tidbit in the Shavuot edition, it definitely would have been the lead tidbit. And I said to myself, not bad that it wasn't, because I don't think I could have done justice to this thought in the space that I allot for the lead tidbit each week. So I took an opportunity this past Monday when I have a shear for women at the center, 3 o'clock, and that was the first time I expressed it. I decided I am definitely going to use it again sometime on Shavuot. I did not use it Shavuot night. I gave a shear on something else. But I did use it in the afternoon, as I said, less than 24 hours ago, of the first day of Shavuot, the only day of Shavuot that we have. We had 2 shiurim. I figured we have a shiur every Shabbat. Then on Shavuot, Zman Matan Toratenu, we should have at least 2 shiurim, in addition to the 5 shiurim we had at night. Okay, so that's the background. Then it comes along with Monday. I tried getting my recorder working, and I couldn't find proper batteries for it, so I went without recording what I said on Monday. Yesterday afternoon, I had no option because you can't record. And then I decided that I'm going to modify it and present it on this immediate post-Shavuot program, which is really Shavuot as well, as I said before, several times. And this way, it's recorded for posterity, and if I feel like it, it will become, Im Yirtzeh Hashem, who knows what will happen by next year, it will become the lead tidbit for Shavuot. With that elaborate personal introduction, let me get into it. You ask the average Jew, child or adult, what is Shavuot? What does it symbolize? What does it represent? What is its essence? Most will say, Zman Matan Toratenu, or words to that effect. Zman Matan Toratenu is what we call Shavuot in the prayer, and it means the time of the giving of the Torah, the time of the receiving of the Torah, the time of the Sinai experience, revelation at Sinai, call it what you will. There is another aspect to Shavuot, and it's important that we view it as a twin to the receiving of the Torah, and put it back into the consciousness and the awareness of the Jewish people for Shavuot, and hopefully for a lot more than Shavuot. Let me now take a step back and start from almost the beginning. In Parshat Vaera, towards the beginning of the book of Shemot, Exodus, God sends Moshe to the people with a very famous prophecy. God says to Moshe, I appeared to the forefathers, Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, in a different way than I am appearing to you, with a different quality, and I remember the promises I made to them about the land of Canaan, which we refer to today as Eretz Yisrael. And I have also heard the cries and the screams of the children of Israel who are enslaved in Egypt, and I remember my covenant. Lachain, therefore, Emor Livnei Yisrael, say to the people of Israel in my name, Ani Hashem, I am God. What follows now are promises from God to the almost new nation, not yet, while they are still in Egypt. And you will see that the promises divide into three verses, one of which we just started, and contain different aspects of the promises from God to the people of Israel. This part I have been saying for years. I've said it in Torah Tidbits audio and in the written Torah Tidbits. I've written about it and I speak about it all the time. But I have a very important modification. Be patient and we'll get there. The promises start with three verbs, three terms of redemption. V'hotzeiti etchem mitachat sivlot Mitzrayim, v'hitzalti etchem me'avodatam, v'ga'alti etchem bizroa netuya uv'shvatim gedolim. In English, I shall take you out from under the burdens of Egypt, I shall rescue you from their service, I shall redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great judgments. Let's call these promises God's plan. And God's plan, stage one, phase one, we will summarize as the Exodus, Yetziat Mitzrayim, taking the Jewish people out of the land of Egypt. Period. Next verse. Hold that thought. We'll be right back with more Torah Tidbits audio for post-Shavuot and Parshat Naso. You are listening to Torah Tidbits Audio, post-Shavuot show, Parshat Naso. And right before the midpoint, I had mentioned the first of three verses, the first set of promises from God, which we summarized as Yetziat Mitzrayim, going out of Egypt. It continues now with another verse. V'lokachti etchem li la'am, v'hayiti lachem le'lokim, v'idatem ki ani Hashem Elokeichem, hamotzi etchem me'tachat sivlot Mitzrayim. Another set of three verbs, which combine to the second phase of God's plan. I will take you unto me as a nation, and I will be your God. That mutual commitment can be summarized as receiving the Torah, which is the covenant between God and the people of Israel, at Mount Sinai. The third verb in that set solidifies that idea by saying, and you will know that it is I, God, who took you out of Egypt. The binding sentence, utterance from God, that began the whole experience of revelation at Sinai, was not, I am God who created the world. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am God, your God, who took you out of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. That knowledge solidifies the bond between God and the people of Israel. I will take you unto me as a nation, v'atem tehiyu li mamlechet kohanim v'goy kadosh. You will be a holy nation to me. Our His being our God is repeatedly pointed out in the Torah when he speaks of Hashem Elokeichem, your God. Even though he is master of the universe and Ribono Shel Olam and Adon HaKol, he is our God. So the second phase of God's plan, as Moshe told to the people of Israel still enslaved in Egypt, is a covenant which we will summarize as Matan Torah, Revelation at Sinai. This is followed by a third verse. The third verse represents, the way I always used to think of it, the third phase of God's plan. Veheveti etchem el haaretz, I will bring you to the land asher nasati et yadi, that I raised my hand in oath, God says figuratively, latet ota, to give it, the land, li Avraham li Yitzhak u Yaakov. Second verb, vinatati ota lochem morasha, I will give it to you, the people of Israel, as a heritage. And this concludes with the words, Ani Hashem, I am God, the same words that introduced the beginning of this plan. Lochein emor lefnei Yisrael, Ani Hashem. Phase 1, Phase 2, Phase 3, Ani Hashem. As such, and I believe this notion, the way I have expressed it now and the way I have been talking about it for years, has a serious error in it, and I hope to straighten that out in due course. Because we think in terms of the cycle of the year and the calendar, and we know that Pesach, Passover, is Zman Chirutenu, the time of our freedom. And we certainly are well aware of the Pesach Seder and the symbols and the mitzvot of Pesach, which all focus on the Exodus, Yetziat Mitzrayim. Then, right up front, we start counting the 49 days, the 7 weeks of the Omer, which culminate with Shavuot, which marks the time when we received the Torah. And, as I mentioned earlier, we call Chag HaShavuot, the festival of Shavuot, the festival of weeks, we call it the time of the giving of the Torah, Zman Matan Toratenu. What we don't see right away is what on the calendar represents the third phase, that of being brought into Eretz Yisrael and being given Eretz Yisrael as a heritage. The answer is Chag HaShavuot. Shavuot, Shavuos, however you pronounce it, is not just the time of receiving of the Torah. It represents the coming into Eretz Yisrael. Because we don't have a three-phase plan. I'll get you out of Egypt. I'll take you out of Egypt. I will give you the Torah. I will bring you into Eretz Yisrael. It was never supposed to be like that. And it became like that mostly through our mess-ups. Let's take a step back from Vo'era, which we were just looking at, to the burning bush. At the burning bush, which is first discussion, first encounter between God and Moshe, we have God telling Moshe the following. This is before he sends him to the people with his message and his mission. God says to Moshe, pardon me, I'm flipping pages at the moment. I have heard the cries of the people, and Va'ered lahatzilo miad Mitzrayim, I will go down to save them from the hand of Egypt, ulha'aloto min ha'aretz ha'hi, el eretz tova urachava, el eretz zavat chalav udvash, el makom ha'kena'ani v'ha'chiti v'ha'emori v'ha'prizi v'ha'chivi v'ha'yavusi. I will go down into Egypt and bring the people up from that land to an expansive land, a land flowing with milk and honey, the land that is currently occupied by the various nations, in other words, to Eretz Yisrael. In one verse, without even the trup mark, which would be the equivalent of a semicolon, the etnachta, there is none in this pasuk, the plan's second phase. First phase, I will take them, I will save them from Egypt in order to bring them to Eretz Yisrael. Doesn't even mention giving them the Torah. A couple of verses later, God says, after Moshe said, "Who am I and how will they know that you sent me?" God says, "I will be with you, and this is the sign that it is I, God, who have sent you to my people to take them out of Egypt. That when you take them out, ta'avdun et ha'elokim al ha'hor hazeh, you will serve God, me, on this mountain." Our tradition is that this mountain was Mount Sinai. In other words, we will enter into a covenant on your way out of Egypt and into Eretz Yisrael. You will receive the Torah, and the second, what we called before, from Parshat Va'era, the second phase will happen on the way to the third phase, to the point where the second and third are more like twins that are born 8 minutes apart rather than brothers or siblings that were years apart. That's the rub. That's the catch. I wanted to suggest, although a woman who had twins told me otherwise, if a couple has a single child followed 2-3 years later by a set of twins, I don't think they introduce their children or refer to their children as, "This is our first child, this is our second child, and this is the third child." That's what happens when the children are spaced a year or two apart, or three, whatever. But not when you have twins 8 minutes apart, born 3 years after the first child. So it might sound like a little thing, but to me it's a big thing in the mind, to refer to Matan Torah and coming to Eretz Yisrael as a twin part of the plan, not as separate components. But it's very hard to think that way. You have to rethink everything because of what happened. Now, in the mashal, the parable, the analogy, picture the twins being born 8 minutes apart, and the first one, born healthy, leaves the hospital after 3 days, is developing nicely, is passing all of his tests, and the second one, unfortunately, has problems, and his Brit Milah is postponed, and he stays in the hospital for a number of weeks, and he's not gaining the way he should be, and he needed maybe corrective surgery here or there, and eventually he comes out of the hospital, and the twins are reunited, and as they grow and develop, the first one develops in a stronger, healthier, natural way, and the second twin still has problems. So one is doing better in school, one is better looking than the other, one is more popular than the other, or some combinations thereof, and yet they are twins. But because of the problems the second one had, they don't look like twins. We don't feel that they are twins, but they are. And in order to do them justice, we need to re-look at them as twins. Back to the Nimshol. If we came out of Egypt and 7 weeks later received the Torah, and there was a significant delay of 40 years, mostly because of the sin of the spies, that postponed our entry into Eretz Yisrael, and the Torah was with us all the time, and the Torah flourished with us, and we had our problems during the time of the first Beit HaMikdash, and we were exiled, and the Torah came with us. Eretz Yisrael obviously didn't. In fact, Eretz Yisrael rejected us, spit us out, because of various sins. And then, with the return of a relatively small percentage of the people, and the building of the second Beit HaMikdash, we still had a serious discrepancy between our attitude towards, and attitude might not be the best word there, between the Torah, which we cherished and developed with outside of Israel, in Babylonia or wherever, and Eretz Yisrael. And then after the destruction of the Second Temple, and I'm skipping obviously a lot of history, the exile, this time not of 70 years, but of almost 2,000 years, has seen Jewish communities flourish in various places around the world where the Jews clung to the Torah. And they developed their own communities with Shabbat and with Kashrut and with learning of Torah and teaching of Torah and mikveh and synagogues and everything that the Jews needed to function. And not only to function, but to flourish in communities around the world in their dispersion. And the significant element that was missing was the twin. The twin in the mashal was again hospitalized for a period of time with other problems, and the healthy twin who was at home maybe had a picture of his sibling, his brother, whatever, but not that direct contact. And back to the Nimshol, the Jewish community needed to survive, needed to do more than survive, and part of that was accomplished by not withering away, pining for the return to Zion. Instead, they relegated Eretz Yisrael to a picture on the wall, to singing Lashon HaBa Yerushalayim HaBenuya, but not to make it an active part of their lives, because they didn't have it. And that would be, back to the mashal, the fact that having a twin who is not developing properly is very hard for a person. And the best way to cope is almost to forget about him. So what Shavuot became was Zman Matan Toratenu, almost to the exclusion of what else it is, which is Yom HaBikurim and Chag HaKatzir, the celebration of not just the agricultural aspects, and that's another mistake people make, which I don't have time to get into, not just the agricultural aspects of Eretz Yisrael, but the agricultural mitzvot of Eretz Yisrael. Bikurim represents not just the growing of the first fruits, it represents performing a very special mitzvah with those first fruits, which requires you to be in Eretz Yisrael and to have a Beit HaMikdash. So that it represents, Shavuot, represents the culmination of what began Pesach time with the Exodus from Egypt in both the receiving of the Torah and of the coming into Eretz Yisrael. But for generations and centuries, when we weren't in Eretz Yisrael, then that sort of people would shrug, and how could they focus on that? So they focused on Torah learning and Torah reading and receiving of the Torah, because that's something that they had with them, that we had with us in exile. Now, I am not at all negating that. I am expressing the fact that we need to bring the twin back into primary focus with the Torah. There's an old chant or a song, Eretz Yisrael Beli Torah, the land of Israel without Torah, He Kaguf Beli Neshama, is like a body without a soul. Maybe. But the opposite is true also. Torah without Eretz Yisrael is like a disconnected neshama, a disconnected soul. It needs a goof to anchor it. The place for Torah is Eretz Yisrael. Now you take a look at some other verses. And these verses, rather than seem to spell out plan A, B, and C, 1, 2, and 3, phase 1, 2, and 3, these, to me, say them more together. Clearly, coming out of Egypt stands by itself. I don't really mean that, because you can't have that as something to celebrate without a focus on the future. But it's independent. Again, I shouldn't use that word, but anyway, here's a pasuk at the end of Bahar, which we read a few weeks ago. Ani Hashem Elokeichem, and this pasuk will sound familiar, similar to the last pasuk in the Shema, which is said more, at least twice a day, if not more. Ani Hashem Elokeichem, Asher Hotzeiti Etchem Me'eretz Mitzrayim. I am Hashem, your God, who took you out of the land of Egypt. Latet Lachem Et Eretz Kenaan. In order to give you the land of Canaan. Ani Elihiyot Lachem Leilokim. To be God unto you. That's the plan. Take you out of Egypt. Be your God. Bring you into the land. Twins. And Shavuot is both of those. I'm not suggesting that we downplay the Torah. I am suggesting that we upplay the role of Eretz Yisrael in this process. Dayenu at the Seder gives us that feeling like the prophecy from Vo'era, which I went through earlier, and it's not, to me, to my mind, the best way of looking at it. Ilu Hotzionu Mimitzrayim, going to take us out of Egypt, and gave us the Shabbos, and then brought us to Sinai, and then brought us, gave us the Torah, and then brought us into Eretz Yisrael and build the Beit HaMikdash. Obviously, there has to be a sequence. You can't do both of those at the same time for different reasons. But you can't separate them the way, unfortunately, Jewish history has led the average Jew to separate them. That's my pitch. Another pasuk. Pasuk in Vo'et Chanan, which we read on the Shabbat right after Tisha B'Av. V'ata Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu is talking to the Jewish people. And now Israel. People of Israel. Shema el hachukim v'el hamishpatim asher anochi melamed etchem la'asot. Listen to the laws and statutes which I am teaching you to do. For what reason? Lema'an tichyu uvatem v'irishtem et ha'aretz. In order to live and come and settle the land. Asher Hashem Elokei Avotechem noten lachem. That God, the God of your fathers, is giving to you. A little bit later, says it again. Re'ei limadati etchem chukim u'mishpatim. See, I have taught you decrees and ordinances as Hashem, my God, has commanded me, to do so in the midst of the land to which you come to possess it. The purpose of mitzvot, the purpose of Torah, is to live a Torah life in Israel. The purpose of Israel is to live a Torah life in Israel. I am way over time. I'm going to have to trim more than a minute from this half of the show. So let me wish you a Shabbat Shalom, Lehishtameah.